I was given some quite detailed instructions for what the sermon might do today. I'm not at all confident that I can follow instructions like that, but I'll try, okay? I was asked to share with you a passage to which I've returned again and again through my time trying to be a minister. And in that, I'll share with you some thoughts about what we've just heard, a very familiar passage for many, one perhaps that most of us have known all of our lives, particularly in the form of the Lord's Prayer. But my interest actually rests with what comes just before that, in the situation which leads to this teaching. We read that Jesus was praying, and the disciples, through one of them, ask him, "Lord, teach us to pray." This request has been a bit of a theme running through my life as a pastor and teacher, and I remember very clearly being at a youth conference as a young leader in what in those days was called a sharing time, and I remember being shocked by being affirmed by some of my mates as a person of prayer. They said they really valued my prayers and my commitment to prayer, and I was shocked because, like lots of Christians, I did not see myself in that way. The fact is that most people who identify as Christian or with some other faith tradition find it easy enough to talk about prayer or to say that prayer is important, but truthfully, whatever we actually mean by that is hard. Something we find hard to maintain or to do consistently or meaningfully, and we find it hard to admit that to each other. We all know there are people who are good at putting on a pretense. The rest of us just keep quiet. And one of my best memories of our time together in this church was the way that people learned not to pretend, to be real with each other about things like this. And I find it really helpful that right there in the Gospels, the disciples, the people that Jesus chose to be really close with him, also felt like this. This was a bit of an issue for them. "Lord, teach us to pray." Now, when you think about it, it's a bit of an unusual request. Surely the people that Jesus chose to be his followers, his helpers and friends, would know how to pray. Surely they were a bit like you and me. They knew at least one prayer, the one we've known more or less all of our lives. More than that, they were Jews, all of them. Jews who would have learned in their families and from the synagogue many forms of prayer. Prayer for different times and different situations. The prayer for before going to sleep. The prayer for rising in the morning. The prayer for before you eat a meal. The prayer for when someone is leaving and going on a journey. The prayer for the dead. All of those were parts of normal life, everyday Jewish life. But you see, the disciples didn't come to Jesus and say, "Teach us some prayers." We might imagine that that's what they meant, given that the gospel writer places right next in the passage what we call the Lord's Prayer, as if this prayer is the answer, "Lord, teach us some prayers." But they didn't say teach us a prayer, or even a new prayer, which we can rattle off every week or even every day for the next 20 centuries or so. No. There was something quite different going on here. It's not that they wanted some new prayers. I believe that this passage is given to us, this story, to reflect something really important, not only in the story of these disciples, but in the experience of the early Christians. The stories that we read were selected amongst the many stories. They were selected and recorded for a reason. They are telling us something about people's encounter with God. God in Jesus. Something that they value and find challenge in and want to keep working on. When people start to follow Jesus on the Christian way, one of the things that we learn is to go right back to basics. It's sometimes called being spiritual children. They sense a need to learn. We sense a need to learn. That's what discipleship is about. And these people sense that they needed to learn all over again, perhaps, what this thing that we call faith is all about. This, I think, was because in Jesus they saw a completely new vision of holiness. These disciples found with Jesus something really different from the kinds of the ideas of holiness that they'd previously encountered, perhaps with their priests or in the temple. A lot of it was about who was in and who was out, or whom to avoid and what not to do. But with Jesus, there was something else. An awesome something, a presence. It seemed to be something more than him, and yet he was part of it. He was one of them, and yet he was special. And that made them feel strange, I think. With Jesus, they felt both welcomed and included, and yet also that there was this strange presence that made them feel a kind of need. And a bit tongue-tied. So they wanted to learn how to become part of this presence that they sensed. And that was the amazing thing about Jesus, that he encouraged people to think of God as a warm, accepting, maybe parent, a kind of tender but strong father, or in other ways like a caring mother who provides for and nurtures God's children. And when Jesus told stories and talked about God in this way, people sensed that God was inviting them with open and loving arms. Now that wasn't easy to accept. It went against so many things that they had been taught about the nature and meaning of holiness and God. Holiness was supposed to be about distance, otherness, a God who is far off and unreachable, and only by careful obedience to the law, by following God's way diligently, can people hope to be part of God's holy people? And this was Israel's special calling, as they understood it. That's what they thought. Somehow Jesus cut through all of that. He didn't cut it away. He seemed to make it more real and yet closer. God was no less demanding, and yet God's holiness was inviting and loving. It was a puzzling thing. Finally, they began to work it out. This challenging, disturbing vision of holiness led the disciples to a new vision of prayer. They began to see prayer not so much as something you do or say, but as an important dimension of who you are, of your way of living. It meant being with God. And this leads to something else that they saw in Jesus. I don't know if you've noticed this, but commonly we hear people talk about their lives as my this life. It may be my working life, or my home life, or my love life, and then you hear my prayer life, or my spiritual life. And I want to ask, so how many lives have you got? Jesus didn't seem to think like that at all. He had only one life. And his prayer life was his whole life. And his whole life was his prayer. Jesus was a person so completely gripped by a sense of God's presence every day and everywhere that he reached out for the God perspective or the God presence in every situation, in every person, in every need. Because that's what prayer is. Opening ourselves to the possibility of God wherever we are. To the active presence of God. As our minister at Collins Street has said, you can do that washing nappies as much as you can in a church place. To be open to the presence and possibilities of God wherever you are. In every situation, Jesus was looking for the divine possibilities. Maybe it was healing or forgiveness or people facing up to the truth, or maybe this family over here learning to get on with each other for once. With Jesus, tears were transformed to gladness and despair into hope and loneliness into community and guilt and shame into new freedom. And not beer and Skittles all the time, struggle and cost. And in that way, Jesus was living his life continually available to God and reaching out for whatever was God's purpose for himself and for everyone else around him. And as a result of that, Jesus' times of prayer, as they are recorded or talked about in a story, were a kind of summation or gathering in of his life, of the whole direction and purpose of his daily life. And I think then this also is what these followers saw. They see this one thing that they'd like to be part of. Not only did they see holiness in a new way, not only did they sense a new vision of prayer, but I think they began to see themselves and the world around them in a new way, a vision of the whole world belonging to God, with God, and God with them. With Jesus, you see, the whole world is God. That's why his prayer says, "Your kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven. The world has heavenly potential. Jesus went around showing that, and the disciples came to sense it. Jesus talked about the coming of God's way or God's commonwealth, not some far-off world, not in the world to come, whatever that means, but here, right now, here, as close as the flowers by the path, or that paddock of wheat over there, or this food on the table, as gifts from God, indications of the presence. Jesus saw things as the things of God, and people as the people of God, and meals as food from God, and the table as the banquet of the Lord. And so they, the communities that followed and eventually wrote this stuff down for us, they all sensed this desire for some new way of prayer. Not new prayers, but a new sense of life with God. They sensed that the Spirit in and of Jesus could include them in that. They could learn to be part of it. And maybe, as the psalmist put it, what God wants from us is not performance, but simply an open heart. One of the great things that has happened in our time to our little stream of the church called Baptists is that many people, not enough, but at least many, have abandoned that long habit of defining who we are by what we don't do or what we don't believe. And instead, there is a freedom to learn from the long and rich and varied history of faith traditions, thankfully. And that includes the rich forms and practices of prayer in the many streams of our Christian tradition and indeed other parts of the human family. To learn to pray with works of art, with ritual and music and silence. Fancy that. I simply want today to leave this text with you and its invitation to us all together to learn again, and in fact again and again, this invitation to life with God, which will of its own accord find its expression in some form of prayer. Will you join with me now? Living God, like those first disciples, we turn to you. Teach us every day how we may listen to you, see you, learn from your presence. Learn to see things around us as you see them in your commonwealth of grace. Learn to see ourselves and our community, our lives, our homes, within your way and your possibilities. And help us to live into and pray into these possibilities. For we dare to ask this in the name and the Spirit of Jesus. Amen.